Sally, you gotta get married to a space. Thank you. Sal?
Yeah?
Can you unmute Mary Lou, please?
I can hear you, Dad.
You may not want to.
Yes, we do. Call the roll of the working group, please.
Mayor Sturmer?
Here.
Commissioner Furr?
Here.
Commissioner Glassman? Commissioner Good?
Here.
Vice Mayor Havilana? Vice Mayor Mayerson? I know I saw him on.
Mayerson's on.
Not everyone is unmuted yet. It's a slow process.
Okay.
Sabrina's
on as well.
Correct. Yeah. Mayor Ryan?
He says Ryan's he's on. Here.
Yeah. Got him. So I think the only two we're pending are Commissioner Glassman and Commissioner McMahon.
Okay, I'm just checking because I'm looking. So far we have 74 people signed on this morning. At least those that are, well, 75 are signed on. And I'm just going through the names of see who we may have missed. So good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us this morning. We know it has been a different time here in Broward County, as well as across the nation. That doesn't mean that we haven't been working doing solid waste and recycling related issues. We appreciate what everyone has been doing, both locally, in your small community and in your larger communities since the start of this pandemic, and we will continue to do. We all know we are dealing with a circumstance that none of us had the ability to foresee, and dealing with health-related issues, dealing with economic-related issues. We know that's all gonna come to a head in the next, at least in Broward County, day or so, as Palm Beach opens up today and Miami moves at least with a targeted date of next Monday. So we've all been doing everything we think necessary to try to flatten the curve. And we wanna thank everyone for doing what you've done and what you will continue to do and for staying focused on this issue. We know we have. The purpose of this morning's meeting, and like I said, we're up to 78 participants. We've never done a meeting like
Mayor
this
Sturmer.
Before. Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Sturmer, Commissioner Glassman has joined us.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Commissioner. We've never done a meeting like this with this many folks here. We're gonna run it basically like we do a regular staff working group meeting. We're gonna, this morning, have a presentation by the Technical Advisory Committee, who was tasked by the working group at our last public meeting, which was our last meeting of the working group in Coconut Creek, to investigate and review various potential options with regard to what could happen next by way of districts or ILAs or other means. They've done that. They've had four subcommittees. There's been four subcommittees. It's been overseen by the Public Works Director from the City of Hollywood, who's gonna start the presentation this morning, and then we're gonna turn to each of them. The way I foresee this morning going, and there's been a PowerPoint available since the end of last week, which is rather substantial. Not sure how we're gonna get to questions today, but what I'd ask you to do is please pay particular attention to these presentations being made. I envision at the end of this meeting, we will, the TAC will not be making a recommendation during this meeting to the staff working group. They were not asked to do so. So they're making presentations. So my suggestion, and then I'm going to ask Commissioner Furr to chime in with any suggestions he has and welcome everybody, is that we set a next meeting for follow-up questions from members of the work staff, from the working group to the TAC, whether it's directly to Peter or to each of the presenters of each of the subgroups, as well as then ask the lawyers that we have assisting us in this to make presentations as well to the working group with regard to their thoughts, with regard to each of the potential, they've done it at a high level, but to do it again then in light of the presentations made by the TAC to the working group, and then try to move from there. So I'm just, that's my sort of overview of how I see this morning going. We will continue move as quickly as we can, understanding the circumstances. Commissioner Furr, good morning.
Good morning, how you doing?
Good.
Welcome everybody. This is a funny way to meet, but it's interesting. You can tell I'm somewhere in San Francisco. I hit some button. I have no idea what happened, and I can't leave. So I'm stuck here. Dan, from what it sounds like, what you're saying is you just want to hear the presentation today, and then we all take our notes, we do our questions, and you want to save those for the next time. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm not sure how much time people had to digest what was in the presentation and what they may hear today, and may want to speak to their folks as well internally, and others, and formulate questions. I'm not sure. I mean, if folks have questions, we can start it today. I'm just not sure we will get through it all today. I'm happy to start it today. Again, you know, it required some significant work by the working group members over the weekend. So I just don't know what everyone's schedule was.
I do think that it may be good if there's some clarifying questions.
Sure.
That help the entire group have a full view of things. If somebody needs clarification on some things, I think that would be helpful.
Okay. That's fine.
Before we start, just a technical issue. While the PowerPoint is being shown, Sally is going to share that screen with the presenters. So while that's being done, you won't be able to ask questions because she can't unmute you. So just please write down your questions. And at the end of it, when she gets the screen back, then raise your hand and she will recognize you for the questions.
Okay. So we're going to go through the entire presentation, then ask questions.
Correct.
Okay.
Peter, good morning.
Good morning. I guess I'm unmuted. Yep.
Yep.
Thank you guys. We appreciate being here today. We took some time. We've been looking forward to actually doing this presentation. I guess, Sally, can we make it full screen? Or do I have control?
There we go.
Okay, let me... Okay, so today we're going to go over the overview of the governance structures for the regional solid waste management system. Next screen. Okay, when the TAC committee was formed, the working group asked us to review and come back with some information on Florida solid waste districts with the following governance structures: interlocal agreements, independent special districts, dependent special districts. They also ask us to look at providing a comparison between the types of government, identify future needs and challenges to be considered. As we all know, as we go through this, there's going to be a lot of work, and a lot of the staff have put a lot of effort into putting this together. Next slide. We had four subcommittees. The first subcommittee, Group A, was chaired by Ralph Trapani. He covered interlocal agreement-based districts and independent special districts. We had Subcommittee B, who looked at the dependent special districts, which was chaired by Leanne Henderson. Next slide. Then we had Subcommittee C, which covered future needs and challenges, which was chaired by Philip Holstein. And then Subcommittee D, which is analysis of all governance structures, and that was headed by Alex Turgis. And as I said before, Everybody's put a lot of effort into it, and I want to compliment everybody on our team. Next slide. At this point, I'm going to turn the PowerPoint over to Melissa Doyle, and she's going to start the presentation off.
Good morning, everybody. By way of virtual introduction, my name is Melissa Doyle, and I'm with the City of Fort Lauderdale. I'll be walking you through the existing governance structures for solid waste, and specifically walking through first, the interlocal agreement-based structure, or ILA. Before we begin that presentation, we thought it was relevant to share some of the quick statistics related to Broward County. Specifically of interest on this slide, I'd like to point out that the total annual tons is roughly 3.9 million for Broward County, and that our recycling tons are approximately 33% of our total volumes. Also of note is that our population is currently 1.9 approaching 2 million. So we'll start first with some of the existing infrastructure in Broward County, which includes the Broward County landfill. And that operates with a tons per day of approximately 210 tons. It is permitted as a class one, but currently operates as a class three, which is basically for non-putrescible or non-biodegradable waste. We also have our renewable energy facility, which is the Wheelabrator privately owned site. And that's approximately 2,250 tons per day. And our recovered material facilities, which are privately owned. We have our ash monofill, which supports the Wheelabrator plant, multiple transfer stations, drop-off centers, and in addition, a closed landfill site. So beginning the review of the interlocal based governance structures, we begin with the Osceola Area Solid Waste Administration. You will see that that's located in the Panhandle area of the state and is a predominantly rural area. It has a total population of about 73,000 and total annual tons of about 61,000. In comparison to Broward County, which is approximately 3.9 million tons annually. And their recycled tonnage percentage is only about 14%. The ILA is comprised of four counties, which includes Dixie, Madison, Jefferson, and Taylor. This ILA was established in 1991 and is governed by one commissioner from each county that is appointed to sit on that governing board. It is authorized through the statutory authorities, both including the Florida Interlocal Cooperation Act and also the local government solid waste responsibilities. And those are in the Florida statutes. The reason that this was initially created, and you will see that when we talk about the New River, which is the next section, is that there were some regulatory changes that came down the pike from Florida Department of Environmental Protection that required landfills to be lined. And there were some significant expenses that were related to those activities. So it was decided by a number of these counties that it would behoove them to coordinate their resources and to join into these ILAs so that they were able to take advantage of the tonnage and the resources of those neighboring counties. Three separate solid waste authorities were created to meet these needs, and that includes the Osceola area. So their current infrastructure is a class one and class three landfill, and this is the Osceola landfill. They do accept out of region waste, and their current tipping fee or cost per ton to dispose of that material is $43. They do have approximately 50 years of life remaining at this particular site, and they do have financial reserves established for a landfill gas capture project to be developed later in the future at an undetermined time. So their annual revenues are approximately $2.47 million, and that's for fiscal year 1920. and they are funded solely through those tipping fees or costs of disposal. Approximately $500,000 is paid back annually to member counties when their earnings exceed their expenses. They do have flow control, and they do have the capabilities that are currently displayed on the screen, which include the ability to acquire property, issue debt, set rates, fees, and charges. They do have the capacity to grant franchises. However, they cannot directly levy non-ad valorem assessments. However, those assessments can be levied individually by their participating counties. So similar to the OSCILA, the next ILA that we were asked to review was the New River Solid Waste Association. This particular service area is just to the east of the OSCILA area and includes Baker, Bradford, and Union counties. Their population is similarly approximately 70,000 residents, with the total annual tons of 60,000 per year. Their recycled percentage is currently 23%. This ILA was established in 1988 and is governed by a body that includes two commissioners from each county that are appointed. This board does elect its officers for one-year terms. They were created under the same statutory authority that we saw for the OSCILA Area Solid Waste Administration. The catalyst is the same as we discussed, and that was the need to line landfills as per the Florida Department of Environmental Protection regulations. Their current structure includes a class one landfill, which is approximately 800 tons per day, so significantly larger than what we saw in the OSCILA example. However, their cost for disposal is approximately the same. Interestingly, New River does accept waste from Alachua County, Gilchrist County, and Levy County, and they include 19 drop-off centers, which are public, and these are simply areas with containers where residents have the ability to drop off or self-haul materials from their homes or businesses. Their future plans do include a landfill gas to energy project that was slated for December of this year, and they have approximately 50 years of remaining life available on this site. Their annual revenues are $9.39 million, and that was as of their 2018 actuals. And much like OSCILA, they are funded strictly through tipping fees. They have exactly the same requirements and capabilities, including flow control, as we saw with OSCILA. The difference here is that the counties that participate are required to provide the necessary funding for the district. So if there is a shortfall at any point related to the costs to operate the infrastructure versus what is received for tipping fees, the counties are expected to split the difference and make up that shortfall. The next one that we were asked to review for the working group was the Independent Special District. And specifically, we were asked to focus on the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority. This includes Escambia and Santa Rosa County in the very western portion of the Panhandle. It has a population of approximately 313,000 residents and a total tons annually of 744,000. Their recycled tons are 49%, and I think that you will see how they achieve that in just a few slides. So this was established in 1981, initially to handle water and wastewater infrastructure and utilities, and in 1992 were expanded to include solid waste management. Their governing body is 5 elected board members, 1 per voting district, and they operate with staggered 4-year terms. Their statutory authority is by Special Act of Florida 81-376. In 1992, the governor signed the executive order charging them with the solid waste collections, and they are overseen by a Citizens Advisory Committee, which is 12 members, and they meet monthly. So their current infrastructure is a class one landfill that manages approximately 600 tons per day. Again, you'll see that tipping fee is right in, as we have seen, at about $45 per ton. They do have one public drop-off center. They have a material recovery facility, which is a fancy name for a recycling center, that was established in 2016 through a public-private partnership. And they accept recycling from New Orleans, Louisiana, as well as from Tallahassee, which may be the reason we see that they have a higher recycling rate. They also have a public composting facility. Future plans for this authority includes improvements to their material recovery facility that will include robotic sorters, and that is expected by 2021. Their annual revenues are $37.5 million, and that is as of their 2020 budget. And their funding mechanism is both through residential rate collections and loans for capital. Interestingly, Emerald Coast also provides collection services for unincorporated Escambia County, as well as for Santa Rosa County. They do have flow control, and they have the same authorities that we saw with both Ausilla and New River. They do not have ad valorem authority. That is at the county level only. Lastly, we were asked to review a dependent special district and specifically to focus on the Palm Beach County Solid Waste Authority. As we all know, Palm Beach is just to the north of us and is probably closest in demographics, with a population of 1.4 million and total annual tons of approximately 3.4 million. Their recycled tons are at 45% in comparison to ours, which are at 33%. Additionally, their renewable energy tons are 24%, and Broward County is currently at 14%. The Palm Beach Solid Waste Authority was established in 1975, and they're governed by all seven county commissioners. The board elects their officers for 1-year terms, and their statutory authority is by the Palm Beach County Solid Waste Act. The catalyst here was the authority was created to address an issue that Palm Beach County was having with multiple unauthorized dump sites that were being operated throughout the county. Their oversight is through the Solid Waste Authority Citizens Advisory Committee, similar to what we saw with Emerald Coast. And they have 11 members that serve as an advisory board to the governing board. Seven of these members are appointed by the governing board, and four members are at large. They do have flow control, which is both economic and contractual. And they do have capabilities that we have seen with the other three. However, they do also have the capacity to levy ad valorem taxes, not to exceed 1 mil on the dollar. Interestingly, the Solid Waste Authority for Palm Beach does levy ad valorem taxes residentially and commercially for disposal. And that is 100% of the cost of disposal for each residential unit, and that's roughly $98 per year. They also provide collection activities in unincorporated Palm Beach County, and they levy the fees for those collections through the non-ad valorems. And in addition, they charge commercial businesses based on the type of business and the square footage for approximately 60% of the cost of disposal. What they then do is give that back as a credit to the haulers to entice them to bring their volumes to the Solid Waste Authority facilities. And that is economic flow control. So their current infrastructure includes two renewable energy facilities, and they refer to them as one and two, that were developed as private-public partnerships. Again, their tonnage rates are approximately $42 per ton. They have a North County Class 1 landfill complex, a recovered materials processing center, and a biosolids processing center, which is where they would process sludge as a result of water and wastewater activities. 6 transfer stations that are public, 7 household hazardous waste and recycling centers, and they also manage 4 closed landfill sites. Their startup funding was through improvement revenue bonds, which had a balance of $824 million in 2016, and initially through $420 million in bonds that were issued in 1984 and 1987. They began those non-ad valorem assessments in 1990 to begin to meet that debt service obligation. And again, as stated, that assessment has 2 components, waste disposal and waste collections. Their annual revenues are $307 million based on their fiscal year 2020 budget. And you'll see below that approximately 60% of those revenues are through those non-ad valorem special assessments, and the remainder's through tipping fees, electricity sales, and recycling revenues at 3%. Their net revenues must equal 110% of that annual debt service. We did want to take a little bit of time to review their renewable energy facilities, as it is similar to what we currently have here in Broward County. So their first waste-to-energy site was constructed in 1989 and refurbished in 2011, and processes about 2,000 tons per day of solid waste. It achieves approximately a 60% volume reduction in weight versus landfilling. Their newest, which is Waste to Energy number 2, began accepting waste in 2015 and was developed as a public-private partnership. They process approximately 3,000 tons per day and achieve a 90% volume reduction in weight versus landfilling. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to City Manager Richard Solomon, who's going to discuss future needs and planning considerations.
All right, good morning, everyone. This is Richard Solomon. As Melissa said, I'm the City Manager for the City of Sunrise. So I'm going to be talking about the future needs and planning considerations for the new system. Hopefully I have control of the slides now and I'll proceed. So we're going to talk about facilities, programs, finances and flow control, and also challenges that we'll have as we move forward. Let's see. I don't think I've got control of the slides. Melissa, if you can go ahead and relinquish control. Okay. All right. Let's see. If we could advance it to my presentation. Okay, I think I may have control now. I apologize for the technical difficulties here. We're all learning in this process. All right, so for the first thing I want to talk about is the future needs for facilities. So first off, we do recommend that we prioritize waste to energy as the solid waste disposal option for the district. Obviously, this is contingent upon us being able to initially negotiate a satisfactory agreement with Wheelabrator that owns the only waste to energy facility in Broward County at this point. And you'll see in the future, we'll also have to consider whether or not we are going to develop our own or additional waste to energy facilities. So we would pursue a long-term contract with Wheelabrator, and they would need to commit to accepting all of the district's waste up to their capacity. We would evaluate expansion requirements for short and long-term county needs. So the waste to energy facility that Wheelabrator has does have a capacity of a little over 800,000 tons per year. They can add another burn unit to that at a significant cost of, I believe, $200 million. And then they would have the capacity to accept over 1 million tons of material per year. So we need to basically figure out what kind of capacity we require with our system and with our disposal. The more we can recycle and push to other types of disposal options, the better we are as far as the waste to energy goes. We also need to develop contingency plans for the disposal of municipal solid waste to supplement the incinerator operations, as well as if we have an issue where the incinerator is down for maintenance or any other reason, we need to have a way to dispose of the solid waste on a temporary basis.
What's your email?
I'm sorry? All right. The recovery of materials processing facility. In concurrence with Arcadis' study, we do feel that development of a recovered materials processing facility is a top priority for Broward County. As we know, there are only two facilities that exist in Broward County right now that are for residential recycling, and both of them are owned by waste management. We do believe that there is it is important that the district develop and own one of these so that we have recycling options and can control the additional materials and the additional processing that we may wish to do. We're recommending that we evaluate the development of a facility that can manage both residential single and dual stream deliveries, and on top of that, that can also support commercial recycling. So we want to have a flexible facility that can handle all of the recycling streams that could come and gives us the flexibility to determine whether or not we need to be doing single stream continuing with that, or if we need to move to dual stream such as Solid Waste Authority has in order to control some of the contamination. We are also suggesting that we consider co-locating enhanced processing facilities with the MRF or the RUMF that we're talking about here. So those are those types of things could include glass processing, shredding of expanded polystyrene foam, which is also known as styrofoam, and other types of processing that would allow us to produce recyclable materials that have marketability. We all know that the global markets right now are severely constrained, and there are a lot of issues with the selling of recovered materials. However, if you do advanced processing on those materials, you can actually create marketability for them by doing that. Landfills. We need to evaluate the remaining permitted airspace at the Ash Monofill and the Broward County Landfill to develop a long-term strategy. We know that there are a number of years left at the Ash Monofill, and there are expansion opportunities there. We also know that the Broward County Landfill has significant opportunities for continued use, but we need to evaluate that, make sure what we're looking at, and also figure out what kind of material tonnage we would be bringing to each of those facilities. We should also evaluate mining the ash monofill to use the ash for other uses such as concrete, aggregate, fill, things like that, because we can extend the life of that ash monofill by reusing the material and putting less material into there for disposal. again, we suggest co-locating facilities at the Broward County landfill site. That could include HHW processing, C&D processing facility, the recovered material processing facility. The Broward County landfill site is a very large site. It has the ability, and it was originally developed so that it could co-locate different technologies out there. Of course, we need to evaluate that site, figure out what the configuration would be, what the space needs are for each of these types of operations, but there is opportunity to co-locate. And the advantage of doing that is that if you have a certain type of material that goes there and then you have de minimis waste or contamination that needs to come out of there, you can then take that waste to one of the other co-located facilities without having longer hauls across the county. We suggest that we evaluate zero waste and zero landfill goals. Right now, there really is no such thing as zero waste. To get close to that, you have to have a waste to energy, you have to have composting, you have to have a number of types of technologies and processes in place, but you can get closer to that. You can minimize the amount of waste that you're disposing, either through reduction of waste, reusing waste, and also processing the recyclables so that you can recycle it effectively. And then we would evaluate disposal options for non-processable waste. And again, non-processable is things that can't be burned, which would be the C&D, the HHW, some of the bulky items, things like that. Transfer stations, we consider that to be an essential part of this system. So we would evaluate the construction of transfer stations to support moving the material between the various district facilities. They can be located around the county, but we'd hopefully have one or two central locations for processing and then a number of transfer stations to allow the municipalities to deliver their material to those closer facilities, get their collection trucks back on the road again, and then we can then haul those to the centralized facilities. We would evaluate the existing public property, including the Alpha 250 piece, for a transfer station use. Prioritizing development of one or more transfer stations for immediate use to improve capture and flow of recyclables and other materials. So right now, there's very limited access for the municipalities to transfer stations in Broward County. There are a number of privately owned transfer stations, and those are not readily available to us, which is why we are limited in what we can do now with recycling and other materials, because we have no way of collecting those, transloading them, and then moving them to other locations for processing. And then, of course, we'd be looking to establish conveyance locations geographically, minimize the travel distances and times across the county. Composting facilities. So this requires further investigation of composting technologies in the Southeast US. We would obviously be looking at a large scale type of facility given the size of Broward County. but there are challenges clearly in Broward County because we are a very urban county. There may not be very good locations for composting with its itinerant nuisances, particularly the smell. And so we may be looking to consider opportunities for regional composting facilities with either Miami-Dade or Palm Beach counties, where they may have some more agricultural type lands that could be used, build a larger facility that could serve multiple counties. We would also be looking to develop waste reduction programs to minimize the volume of food waste to begin with. Household hazardous waste. So we would again consider co-locating the HHW receiving stations at facilities throughout the county. Right now, Broward County has a few of those that they use for that purpose. We would have to look at those facilities, see what their availability is, and see if they are located in convenient locations, if we need additional locations, et cetera. And we would examine the utilization of that existing HHW infrastructure to see if it's being used for anything besides HHW so that we know if there are going to be conflicts or if we have to plan around that? So clearly we would need to evaluate available land in Broward County that is available for solid waste uses. The Alpha 250, we know that that property is owned by the county on behalf of the municipalities. We recommend retaining ownership of that and evaluating that land for use as a transfer station site and potentially processing of other materials. It's large enough to co-locate potentially multiple types of operations, whether that's C&D or HHW or some other type, as well as transfer station. Potentially, you could put a recycling facility on there, but we need to evaluate where we're gonna put all these facilities, and Alpha 250 is certainly a key property there. But we also need to look at other publicly and privately owned property that is suitable for our facilities. There are a number of privately owned parcels throughout Broward County that are already permitted for solid waste. And then there may be other publicly owned property that could get the appropriate permitting required. So now we're going to talk more about the programs. That was the facilities. So we basically looked at this as immediate programs that when we start up the district, we need to look at these programs being in place, and then ones that we can plan for the future. They don't need to be in place immediately. So immediately, we clearly need to have MSW processing and disposal. We need to have residential and commercial recycling. And we do want to make sure that recycling is for commercial and multifamily. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but we need to make sure that that is mandatory recycling. Construction and demolition debris, processing and recycling. Again, there are facilities in Broward County right now that handle that. They're privately owned. There may be opportunities to work with the private sector on something like that, but we need to evaluate those things. Bulk trash processing and recycling, same thing. There are some facilities in Broward County that handle that. We have to determine whether or not, I apologize, we can use those facilities or if we need our own. Household hazardous waste and electronics processing facilities. And then we also need to make sure that we have district-wide education outreach. This will be one of the most critical things so that we're all working on the same information, we're pushing the same information out to all of our residents, and that there is a standard marketing program, an outreach program for all of Broward County, because we will need to do a lot of informing of our residents and businesses to make sure that we are getting their full participation and cooperation, particularly on the recycling side. For the future, we can look at things like yard waste recycling. Do we really want to have a separate yard waste collection and recycling program, or do we want to continue to do yard waste through our current bulk waste collection programs? Composting, as I've already discussed, is an option we should look at. Biosolids processing, Melissa mentioned that they have that in Palm Beach County. It's a very expensive proposal, but it would be very advantageous for all of the wastewater treatment plants across Broward County, because right now disposing of biosolids is very challenging. It's very expensive. We're hauling those materials considerable distances outside of Broward County to make sure that we have an opportunity to get rid of them at all. But there are regulatory requirements that keep minimizing the number of opportunities we have for disposal of biosolids. Again, zero waste and waste reduction goals and programs, we should be looking at that. And that is certainly something that we can make great achievements on. We'll probably never get to zero waste itself, but we can certainly make a lot of progress there. Disaster debris processing and disposal. This is something we need to determine whether it needs to be part of this system or whether it will be handled outside of the system in coordination with Broward County. In the former resource recovery system, we had an Adopt-a-Street program and some other programs. We need to look at those and see whether or not we want them to be part of this new system or whether we would rather keep them separate and work either with the county or the municipalities working individually on those. So now we'll talk a little bit about finance and flow control. So flow control, there, as Melissa mentioned, there are two different types. There's contractual flow control, which is the delivery of materials. That's all of the participating communities in the district would agree that they're going to deliver their materials to the district approved facilities, whether they're district owned or contracted, but they would all deliver their materials that way. Economic flow control are the non-ad valorem assessments that we would implement that would cover a portion of the disposal costs so that it makes it advantageous for all of the haulers to bring their material to district facilities because the cost of disposal is going to be lower through economic flow control. Revenues, we'll have revenues from processing disposal fees for the MSW, the C&D debris, and other materials. So there will be tipping fees that are charged in certain cases. And so we will have material receipt fees there. We will very likely have to issue debt and have repayment of debt as part of the facility. If we're going to build new facilities, they can cost, you know, tens of millions or more in dollars. So we need to make sure we have availability of money there. We have to talk about facility closure and long-term maintenance costs. Same time you have landfills and ash monofills, things like that, you're going to have closure costs eventually, and you're going to have long-term maintenance
costs. Richard, excuse me a second. Richard, excuse me. Folks, if you have an open line and there's background going on by you, please mute yourself. Thank you. Richard, sorry.
No problem. Thank you. So we'll need to be paying into the long-term maintenance and closure along the way, but we also have to plan for the end, we'll have those closure and maintenance costs. And then we'll have to have startup financing. Day one, we go into this system, we're not gonna have necessarily a lot of cash on hand unless we plan for how we're gonna do that, whether it's through loans, through debt, through some other form of startup financing. And then we're going to talk a little bit of challenges for the future. So one of those challenges is clearly going to be we need to assemble enough property for the use of district facilities and the placement. So we can do that through direct ownership. We can do it through leases. We can do it through licensing. We can do it through P3s. But we're going to have to assemble property. The processing and marketing of recyclables. We all know that the recycling markets globally are in turmoil and have been for quite a while, and there's a lot of uncertainty in those markets. It's very difficult to sell the materials that we're producing right now because they are not particularly high quality. And so that's where the cost versus the benefits of enhanced processing, whereas the private sector is profit motivated and they need to minimize their costs, as public sector agencies, we have the ability to determine, okay, what do we need to do for our long-term sustainability goals? And do we want to commit additional dollars to make sure we're doing things in a different way that is more sustainable? So that's where we can get into those enhanced processing options that will cost money to build facilities and operate facilities, but they, in the long term, we will be able to get rid of, recycle more material, and we'll be able to find markets for it. But it costs money upfront and along the way for operations. Contamination of recyclables, we've been hearing about that for quite a bit. We know that that's an issue in Broward County and across the country. So the real key there is public education and then enforcement. And that is how you change behavior. If we need to change the behavior of our residents and businesses, they need to stop putting the wrong materials into the recycling stream. And so we need to educate them, and then we need to let them know when they're not doing it right. The mandatory commercial and multifamily recycling, this is one of the areas where we've had very poor compliance in the past in Broward County, and we absolutely need to get it under control going forward. So we need to make sure that we have the ability to mandate commercial recycling. We cannot mandate where those companies take their waste, but we can mandate that they are recycling the materials. Same thing with multifamily, we can mandate recycling there, and we can also, because we control the residential, we can control where that recycled material is taken. We have to have mandatory processing and recycling of C&D debris, bulk waste, yard waste, and hazardous materials. So we need to have those in place. Again, all of this creates challenge for enforcement and making sure that whatever companies we're working with, private sector for C&D, bulk, any of those things, that they are also observing our requirements for recycling so that they have implemented all the recycling processes that we want and that they are ultimately disposing of any of the remaining waste in the appropriate manner. The geographic accessibility of district facilities for all municipalities. What we need to avoid is that Coral Springs shouldn't have to haul all the way to Pembroke Pines or someplace else just so that they can dispose of their materials. There should be closer facilities for them so that their collection trucks are not driving across Broward County and losing hours of actual time collecting material at the curb. And then we have to develop strategic partnerships with the private sector and nonprofit entities. There are companies out there that we can work with, whether it's Wheelabrator or others, that can assist us in achieving a lot of our goals, whether that's short-term or long-term. We can start off with a private sector partner and then plan for 20 years down the road or 10 years down the road, we will transition to something else. But we need to figure out what those options are, where it makes sense for us, and then we can proceed down that path. Again, determining whether public ownership or operation of each facility is critical. Again, I think we believe on the recovered materials facility that it is critical that it's publicly owned because we need to be able to control those processes, especially if we're going to invest in enhanced processing. On the MSW side, if we're going to work with a long-term contract with Wheelabrator, it may or may not be important for us to have public ownership. If we can get to an acceptable long-term agreement with Wheelabrator, we may not need to plan for the private or the public ownership of that facility because building one of those facilities is upwards of $750 million. So we need to make sure that we are in tune to what the practical ability of implementing those is. And it also takes obviously years to plan and build one of those facilities. We need to determine how the district will use the county facilities. Broward County currently owns the landfill, the transfer stations, and some other land. We need to make sure that we have an ability to use those facilities. And we're gonna have to work with Broward County, whether it's through leasing or licensing or transfer of ownership, whatever the case may be, we need to figure out how we're gonna use those facilities. We need to build in the flexibility to incorporate future technologies. We don't know what the technology is going to be in 10 or 20 or 30 years, but we're going to have facilities that are in land. We need to build in the ability to incorporate whatever those future technologies or to convert to those future technologies in the future. We don't want to get stuck with one legacy technology for 30, 40 years when we really needed to be at something else. We're going to need to gain municipal participation with limited information about future costs. This is actually a significant issue because we're obviously trying to get 31 cities in the county to partner here, but we don't have information right now about what it's going to cost them to participate. So we're not going to be able to tell them precisely what it's going to cost them, what their tipping fees are going to be, what their non-ad valorem assessments are going to be, any of those things. But we can certainly, working with consultants, we can model those things and we can get to a very good estimate of what it should cost us to run the district and what we will need in the way of revenues to support that. And so we just need to get, again, this is where we will partner with our consultants and work through a lot of those types of issues. And then we need to develop a sustainability action plan for the district. We need to know what our goals are for the long-term environmental sustainability of Broward County's solid waste flows. And that will help to drive what we're doing with recycling, what we're doing with composting, what we're doing with all of these other technologies as we move down the road. But that will be a key piece up front, all of us understanding what we're trying to achieve long term. And that's the end of my presentation. I'll pass it off to Alex now.
Sally, can I unmute Alex, please?
Working on it.
Okay, thanks.
Richard, can you relinquish control, please?
Absolutely. I apologize.
No worries.
Okay, I'm unmuted, everybody. Thank you. Hold on while I try and get control of the screen.
Give me 1 second before you do. Let me make sure the PowerPoint is on full screen.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead and request control.
Okay, I did. Thank you. Okay, I have control. Second as I get to our section. Okay. Everybody else on mute? I hear noise in the background.
Should be good.
Okay, thank you, everybody. At this point, going through future needs considerations, let's turn it back around and review the governance structures. As was mentioned in the beginning, we have three basic types, the ILA, the independent structure, and the dependent. Okay, so why don't we start by talking about ILAs and certain points. An ILA, and let me mention ahead of time that they all share some similarities and have distinct differences. So here we're gonna go through the points of an ILA. They can establish a separate legal entity, and they can possess common powers through a commission, board, council. They can also incur debts, liabilities, and obligations, and those do not affect the participants individually. The ILA acts as a separate entity in that effect. They can also acquire, construct, they can own, improve, they can operate and manage facilities, as long as it relates to the governmental function and purpose. So as long as it's solid waste related in our instance, it would be, it'd be able to do that. Now, they also, ILAs have powers to finance. They can operate and manage facilities as long as they're public facilities. They can set rates, they can set charges, they can set fees. So in that, they meet the needs of what we're looking for. They can also sell and finance either all or portions of those facilities. They have the ability to levy special assessments, and they can use revenues to pay off bond obligations or debts. I still hear somebody in the back unmuted. Can everybody make sure that you're muted? Okay. Participants can also drop out or choose not to renew as determined by the ILA when it's created. Now let's talk a little bit about independent special districts, as they have some distinct differences. They are created to carry out a specific function for a specific geographical area, and they're not controlled by the county or a city. It's its own entity once it's established.
When did you open up?
Hold on. The Florida State Legislature Here is what creates it, either by special act or by approval, by a charter approval. Now, what this means is once it's set up, these provisions and powers that are developed locally are sent to the state legislator for approval. So the localities, the cities or communities would create what they want and submit it to the Florida state legislature. And that would include things like requirements and mission, financing methods, governing body composition, and the procedures for setting bonds. Then the powers are established by the Florida state legislature, and that's based on the charter, and it's approved as a special act. Oh, something went wrong. Hang on. Let me get back to that slide. Okay, here we are. Sorry about that. Now, another key point of independent special district, the state does retain control or some oversight. And the way it does that is through annual reports that are required to be submitted. It also has an auditing committee, so they require transparency. The state, through approval or amendment of the charter, may authorize assessments through ad valorem or non-ad valorem taxes. Now, another key point is millage would not count against the 10 mil cap of local government. So they can go above the cap. And as for board members, like I said before, it's all set up with the special act, and it determines how they're selected, the terms, et cetera. Now let's switch our thoughts to dependent special districts. They are also created to carry out a specific function in a specific geographical area. Now they may be created by the Florida State Legislature by special act or county ordinance. Now, if it's done by ordinance, it requires the approval of the affected communities or municipalities. And another difference is tax assessments, which they can do, it's added to the millage of the county and it cannot exceed the tax cap. All right, control. Requisite control over the district. The controlling entity's governing body must, one of the three, must be either identical to that of the district and must have control over the membership of the district's governing board or control over the district budget. Doesn't have to have all of those, but one of those. All right, so let's summarize this a little bit easier in a table, which goes through the different abilities of each of the three governance structures. So as you can see on the top, local control, the ILA and the dependent special district have that. However, the independent special district, even though that's an X, it has the ability of local control with the setup. When you create it, that's when you put in the what you need. The difference is you can't change as readily or as easily. Retention of all common powers, ILA allows that for the municipalities. The others do not. Power to levy special assessments, they all retain that ability. Now, when it comes to taxing authority, like I said, the independent special district can, without a tax cap, the dependent special district cannot. It can, but it's subject to the tax cap. Now, talking about the agreement, the entire county is bound by the agreement in an independent special district. In the other two instances, it's subject to their approval and opting in. created by Florida legislature, the one that requires that is the independent special district. However, the dependent special district can be created that way. State oversight, as I said before, the independent special district requires that. They require transparency. Tax millage counts, we run over that already. The dependent millage, the dependent district has the millage cap. The independent does not. And the ILA, it should really say not applicable. Municipality participation option. Like I said, they can opt in or opt out for an ILA. For a dependent district, you can opt in. Independent district, you really have no option because the entire county is in. Hope that didn't confuse you too much. At this point, I will turn it over to Peter for any questions or concerns or following comments.
Oh, all right. Can we get the presentation back up? Okay. Well, there's not a lot more to the presentation itself, but what I would like to do is take a moment and thank everybody that was on the TAC committee. Everybody spent a lot of time putting a lot of this information together. I know this presentation was long. We would ask the working group to take time to look through it, consider it. And for the purposes of what we do, we're here at your disposal to try and help answer questions for you. And if you have any other things that you want us to look into, we would be more than willing to do that. We're just looking for your guidance on it. At this point, I will turn it back over to the mayor and let him take the meeting from here. And if we can help, please let us know. Thank you guys for everything we've done.
Thank you to Peter, Melissa, Richard, and Alex, and everybody on the TAC for your hard work. At this moment, I'm actually going to turn it over to Commissioner Firm. Sally, can you unmute Beam, please? Beam, one sec.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank the TAC group. That was excellent. I thought that spelled everything out exactly in ways that we all needed to hear again, to hear the comprehensiveness of what we're trying to do, and all the options. When I hear that, all three. When I hear what the kind of startup costs were at Palm Beach, when I hear the breadth of what Richard was talking about and all the things that were required and really the amount of money that it might take, and then when I heard Alex enunciating and articulating the different, you know, possibilities there with governance structure, we have quite the decisions to make. But it does, you know, what it does make me want to know is when I heard that, I hadn't, you know, I read that, I looked over the PowerPoint beforehand. It's so much better when somebody's explaining it as it goes on, because you miss so much. But when I heard the startup costs on, and if I heard it wrong, you know, let me know. But when I heard the startup costs for Palm Beach, like, you know, I think it was $800 million or something like that. And I think in terms of how much we're going to need, it's, you know, that is, and I don't know where we're going to find that number, but we kind of need that number because that is going to determine some things. And I say that because when I think of the different governance structures, I want to know which one's going to work out best that can help finance this, and is, you know, everybody's going to feel comfortable with. There's lots of parts to this. Richard, you had mentioned the part with sludge, which most people don't even realize is a part of this. But I will tell you, most of the northern counties above us are tired of getting our sludge. And that is becoming a big issue. We have, you know, from the northern part of the county, we're doing Class B sludge. They don't want that anymore. And unless there's some, you know, we got to figure out some ways to do this. So I guess, you know, at this point, I think we need to hear some of what the cost might be. And we see that if you read the Arcadis report, you see what it would take to add that fourth burner, which I think Richard articulated very well the need for that. When I look at, you know, that entire Arcadis report, it told me that if we were able to recycle enough, we might be able to get by with one burner, one extra burner. But it means being really efficient and really good on recycling. And that means having our, you know, obviously having our own MRF, and having one that really takes that much stuff out of the mainstream. That's the only way where we're going to be able to do only one burner. And that's only for, and that may be only for present day. You know, we may be having to look down the road. Maybe we have to build another burner. I was impressed with burner number one and burner number two on Palm Beach, and the difference in the efficiency on burner number two as opposed to burner number one, unless it's just capacity issue. And maybe, Peter, do you know the difference on that?
No, it's not the capacity. It is how they've developed. The technologies have gotten better over time. If you look at the dates when they were implemented, it is the technologies and what they can process through them. That makes the difference in their efficiency.
And that was a big difference, because we're still dealing with what is burner number one with Wheelabrator, essentially. And unfortunately, the time where we were dismantling our other incinerator was the time Palm Beach was building theirs. Mm-hmm. Don't even want to go into that. But so I think that, you know, the next steps are, you know, we kind of glossed a little bit over the financing, but I don't think we can afford to gloss over that. I think we really have to figure out how big a MRF we need. What does that cost? If we need to buy land for transfer stations, what does that cost? If we're going to put in another burner, what does that cost? And how do we get the money, the initial money for that? I have I'm not sure I see that through an ILA. I'm not sure how we could do that. That's a question I would have. I can see it either with the dependent or the ILA or the independent. And the other part on the dependent that I think got glossed over a little bit was the composition of the dependent. I know in Palm Beach, it is the seven county commissioners up there. But I think people should take a good look at what are the options there, in that it can be a blend between county commissioners and city commissioners and things like that. We can put together a composition that people feel comfortable with. That allows for transparency, that allows for, you know, to that can reflect everyone's thinking, a broad scope of thinking on this. So that's my first initial thoughts. Peter, I do want to say you guys did a great job on this. And I'm so glad, I think I'm seeing that this was recorded. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I am going to try to make sure the other county commissioners have a chance to see this. I think it's important for, honestly, every city commissioner, every county commissioner in this county to see this. Because this brought the entire challenge into an understandable venue. And so I do want to thank you very much for that. We still got some big decisions to make. But with that, I'll pass it back over to Dan. Thanks again, Peter. Good job.
Thanks, Peter. I would like to add one thing to you. I'd like to add a little bit to that. I just totally lost my train of thought. Sorry about that. But under the Palm Beach County thought, when we all did our research, it started out as an independent district and morphed into a hybrid independent dependent district. So what you were saying about the choices of how you set that, the governing body structure up, is actually very important, because it's not set as just one group. It is done through those original agreements and those initial charters. So that's a good, very good point to add to that. And I'll remember what I wanted to say otherwise, and I'll turn it back over.
Yeah, and let me, let me just go on one that. We have done the legal background check on that, just to make sure. And it's in State Statute 189 that allows for us to figure out the composition of those kind of things. Obviously, you know, the backstop's still a county, but how that's governed can make all the difference. That makes everybody feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I was talking at the beginning about our next meeting, having the lawyers start chiming in as well, because what I don't want to do, we all have questions as well. So we thought it was important to at least get the TAC out with their presentation. Then we're going to come back after today's initial question and answer session, have another follow-up one, ask the TAC to make a representation, and then ask on the legal counsels that have been working with us to do that. What I'm going to do now is go through the members of the working group to see if they have any questions today or would like to hold them for next time. We're going to start with Commissioner Tooley. And you're on mute. You're on your end. Good morning, Becky.
Morning, Dan. I think that's a good idea, Dan, what you said, that, you know, I learned quite a bit today. So I'd like to thank the working group. And it's, you know, being brought up with the ILA, you know, the financial on it. So to me, that kind of knocks that out. So I'm ready whenever you set up our group. So.
Okay. Commissioner Glassman.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. And I also wanted to thank the TAC group for that presentation. Excellent. I went through it yesterday, and today was even better listening, as Commissioner first said. I did put a question on the chat. Are we legally bound for the specific criteria as listed in the comparison for governance structure on page 65 and 66? Are we able at all to sort of mix and match some of these elements, or do we have to stick to it? I was specifically questioning whether we can bind the entire county under a dependent special district. I know it says no on page 65, but are we allowed to play with these at all?
I'll chime in a little bit on it. I think based on what Alex has found out is that you can't bind everybody in a county under the dependent unless the municipalities want to buy into it. Now, does that mean you can't? I would have to say that would probably be left up to a legal team.
Yeah, that might be part of the system. We will ensure that the lawyers, Kaoki, Mike Cirillo, and Jamie specifically respond to that. I don't want to put Peter or the TAC in a position of giving us a legal answer that the lawyers may later say, well, there's a nuance that the TAC wasn't looking at. So let's just hold that question for now.
Okay, great. Thanks. You.
Anything else, Commissioner?
No, I'm good right now. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Good.
Thank you, Mayor Thurmer. You all hear me okay?
You're open.
Good, great, great, great. And I also thank Commissioner Furr for his comments. Very well said, sir. I want to say that, I visited a couple of the TAC meetings and watching them go through their process. And I can't tell you how much I really appreciate their best-in-class professionalism as they went through this, which is evident with the excellent presentation that they gave us today. Great discovery, great presentation of the information. A lot of information, a lot to digest, Mayor Sturmer, I agree. There's a lot for us to do going forward. I do have, however, two questions, maybe if my colleagues will support, in terms of directing TAC for additional information. There, you know, things that came to my mind during this presentation. One is Commissioner Furr, you know, brought up some very good points about the cost, and you know, the startup costs are going to be, you know, pretty impactful. I would like to ask if the TAC can identify what the startup cost was back in 1980, whatever three, when we started out in this with the resource recovery system. There was a startup cost, it was substantial, but what was that, and how did that get off the ground? And then the second question would be, Palm Beach County did go through a state statute in order to become formally a dependent district. Are they bound by the rules that the independent districts are when they're formed by state statutes? So those are my two questions. If my colleagues are willing to support that, that would be, I think, very good information to be brought back at the next meeting. And thank you for allowing me to comment, Mayor.
And we love your sunflower. We're just waiting for the bees to just either go to the flower or you. We're not sure which.
Well, this Mayor was, Ryan, to be perfectly honest, this is in reverence to Mother's Day. So I want to say to all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day, even though it's a little late.
Mayor Ryan.
I don't have any other questions. They were asked of each of the commentators beforehand. TAC did a great job. I agree with the comment that was made that we should be sharing this with our individual commissioners, this recording today, because if the information is really good. And going forward, I think, Mayor Sturmer, you've rightly pointed or focused us on the legal, financial, and boundary issues. What are the limits of what we can do in mix and matching? So I have nothing further. I look forward to the next meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner McMahon?
May I interrupt? This is Alex. The question that came up regarding the dependent district, the answer to that is, as far as I understood it, reading through the different documents, was that you can't, the only way you can ensure entire county participation in the dependent district is if they all opt in during the creation of it, or if it's done through the Florida state statute. They can create it like an independent, but it can be a dependent.
Thank you, Alex.
That answers that.
Thank you, sir. Vice Mayor Mayerson.
Good morning, everybody. Great presentation by the TAC committee. It's a lot to obviously digest in just a couple of settings. So I kind of agree with Commissioner Furr is that we need to get this out to our city commissioners and have them take a look at it as well. I'd just be curious to find out in the other counties, being the Palm Beach and the couple of other districts, whether all the municipalities are participating in those agreements, or some have opted out, or some have participated and then down the road have opted out. I agree, obviously, there's, you know, major concern about financing, but I think that can be, we can look at that as we move forward, but obviously a major concern. No comments.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. And Madam Vice Mayor.
Hi, Mayor. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good morning, Sabrina.
Good morning, everyone. The TAC presentation, I know a lot of work went into that. Thank you so much. I know this has been delayed, but I really appreciate it. And everyone had some great questions and things that I want to hear about at our next meeting. I did have two questions, and they don't necessarily have to be answered today if we don't have the answers. You know, we could bring it back to the next meeting. I just wanted to know, under independent and dependent special districts, would we still be able to collaborate with other counties after the approval of the creation of the district for regional opportunities that are out? Because I know these are specific to the geographical boundaries of the district that we're creating. So that was one question that I had. And then the second question was regarding all of them, the ILA, ISD, DSDs, what are their lifespans? Is there a set limit on one or the others? Is it set by us, by the creating legislation or charter documents? so we can make sure that it's sustainable for a long period of time, rather than coming back to renew this every, I don't know, 10, 15 years or so. So those were the two questions that I had after today, but I'm sure at our next meeting we'll have more.
Thank you, everybody. And I know Sam's on the call. I know Jamie's on the call. And I know there's plenty of county staff on the call. So what the consensus is, what we'd like to do, I believe, is get answers to the questions, Peter, some of it from you and your team with regard to questions raised from members of the working group, going back to the raised by Commissioner Good with startup costs and Commissioner Furr on some of his questions and the vice mayor on some of hers. Some of them will go to our legal folks, Sam, Jamie, and the county team to coordinate responses, at least to those questions, and I'm sure others that will arise as people have questions. Is there a consensus among the working group? And I'll ask the question and then I'll sort of go down the roll and ask everyone to chime in, to ask the working group to make a recommendation to make a recommendation to the working group based on their thinking. It's up to us whether we want to accept it or not, but do we want to hear their recommendation? Commissioner Tooley, yes or no? Commissioner, you're on mute.
I'm sorry, Dan, I didn't hear the question.
Do you want at our next meeting the TAC to make a recommendation on which structure they recommend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Glassman? You're on mute, Steve.
I totally lost mute.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I would like to hear that recommendation and why.
Understood. Commissioner Good?
I'm interested in hearing what they say, providing that they have their city council support on their recommendation from each city.
Well, no, but they're making a recommendation to us as to what they think is the professionals would be. They're not doing this on behalf of their city.
And but each TAC member represents their city, is that correct?
No, they are here as representatives of the group, not their specific city at the moment. Mm-hmm. They're not doing it on behalf of a city, Tom. I didn't hear
you. I already made my comment. I agree, and I would like to know if they got support from their city.
Okay. Mayor Ryan? You're on mute, Mike. Mike, you're on mute.
All right. I'd like to see the recommendation. I do not want necessarily their view of their council, because again, that I think adds a layer of complexity to it that puts a little bit too much of a finger on the scale for any particular city. I think their recommendation is just that. We can reject it. And then we're going to have the obligation, quite frankly, before we make our ultimate recommendation, we're going to have to go back to the entire group and make our presentation to everyone, so that people in all the municipalities, not just those represented, can actually weigh in and ask questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Vice Mayor Mayerson,
where'd you go?
Yes. DR. Yes. Madam Vice Mayor Jabalana.
Yes. So, I mean, I think we have the Arcadis recommendation. I'd like the TAC recommendation, and then, you know, we would be the final decision makers. So I agree.
Mr. Vice Chair. You're on mute, Beam. Beam, you're on mute. Beam, you're on mute.
Okay. Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. With all due respect, I'm going to say no. Okay. I think it's probably... They've done a fantastic job of giving us the information, and our job is to make those decisions this case.
Understood. There's a consensus to ask Peter and the TAC to come back to us at our next meeting with answers to the initial questions asked by members of the working group, and to prepare at the end of that to make a recommendation and the reasons why you're making that recommendation, and comparisons as to why you're not choosing the others. We'd like to, you know, you're the folks who've gone out and investigated, and if you're going to make a recommendation, tell us why, and tell us why that choice is in your minds better than the other options that are available to us. We will also have our legal counsels about making a presentation at that next meeting with regard to their thoughts with regard to the options available to us and the legal requirements that may need to be involved with regard to each. And again, they started that at the beginning, but I think we need them to come back again now that this presentation and what's going to happen at the next meeting follow to give us a refresher on what that is. What else you thinking, Beam?
Well, I think we have to digest it. I want to hear from my colleagues. I'm sure you want to hear from your colleagues after we share these things, because I think that's gonna bring forth a lot of conversation. So I'm kind of wanting to, you know, I'm probably going to ask for a workshop with the county commissioners just so they can see this or something like that. It needs to be shared. These are going to be big decisions that have to be made. Lots of responsibility, you know, for years and years to come. So those things need to be shared first. Then I want to be able to share those with this group and go from there. So I think I've got a little bit of homework to do first, and sharing as much as I can and seeing where everybody is on this. That's what I'm thinking right now. This was a tremendous presentation, but one that needs to be digested and deliberated on.
So, Beam, are you thinking of trying to have your commission workshop before our next working group meeting?
I don't know if that's going to be able to happen, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Yeah, I don't know, because I'm not sure the timing on that. I am going to ask for it to be shared immediately and ask everybody to look at it. And then I may just ask for it to be a discussion item on a county commission agenda, which would allow me to do that fairly quickly.
Okay.
Then you know, because, you know, with those kind of, when you start to think in terms of where debt would be incurred, and, you know, for the county commission, I'm looking at it, there's differences on how that gets determined as where that counts against our millage or not against our millage. And we have to kind of, and I don't know what my colleagues think of that. So I need to find that out. That's important to know, because it does make a difference between independent and dependent. So I kind of need to hear that.
And you got the county administrator's attention. Her head perked up when you went there. Mayor Ryan.
Let me just
pipe in on a timing issue. I agree, Commissioner Furr, with the idea that we're going to need to do that. Obviously, if you do a workshop or you do a discussion item kind of going through, then really we're going to be all expected to do that in every one of the cities, which is fine. Except I think we still have some outstanding questions that I'd like to refine at least one more iteration before we go do that. There were great questions raised. And if we could just do that first, which would then give you time to start scheduling a workshop sometime in the future, then Mike, we'll have time to go back.
Mike, I think that's a good point. I'm happy to wait on that, because you're right. There were some very good questions brought up, and we do need some answers on that first. So that's a good point.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Good.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I am what are we asking for in terms of a recommendation back from TAC specifically? Maybe I misunderstood something.
Out of the various proposals and things they reviewed, which they think, in their opinion, would work best in Broward County.
And that's inclusive of a governance structure?
No, that's a different issue.
And having that understanding, then I'm okay with them making a recommendation then.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't want to put TAC in the middle of making a governance recommendation at all. that's a hot potato. That's to me not on their plate.
And Mayor, okay, can I make a Mayor?
Sure. Go ahead.
And that was my point. I didn't want to put them in the middle on that.
No,
if we wanted to ask them on recommendations with regard to MRFs and transfer stations and composting facilities and extra burns, all that stuff, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Happy to hear that on the mechanics of making this happen.
Yeah,
but on the governance structure, I think that's a distinction.
No, I guess thank you for all cleaning up my imprecise language. It was about which system type, not necessarily how it would be run. Who would run it, I should say.
Right, that's a big distinction.
No, my apologies. Okay.
Mayor, if you don't mind.
Peter?
I'm glad you clarified that because I actually misunderstood it. I thought you were asking about the governance structure.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we've talked within the TAC committee or subcommittees on multiple occasions here, when we finally look at what structures we want to go with, I think ultimately that's going to come with the type of governance structure you choose.
Mm-hmm.
If you, I think you would be, you know, based on our conversations and, the TAC committee, subcommittee chairs are welcome to speak up, but I believe that we would be putting the cart before the horse if we did that, because then it would direct you to a specific type of governance structure, and that may not be the appropriate way to go. As far as the questions that you're asking, I want to definitely get a detailed list of what those questions are, so we're answering them correctly. I would like to let everybody know that when we're doing this, we are unfortunately bound by, unfortunately, however you want to look at it, bound by sunshine laws. So every meeting we have to sunshine. So it can, I'm going to have to ask you for a little bit of time before your next working group meeting, because if we're going to get the list of questions, review, take the time to answer, that sort of thing, it may take a little bit more than a week or two for us to accomplish that, specifically because of sunshine.
Understood. Thank you, Peter. What I would ask is, members of the working group, if you have further questions, if you can reframe your questions from today, send them to Mary Lou. She will coordinate all of the questions back to the working group so we have them. And then that way, understanding, as Peter explained, every one of our meetings is sunshined and open to everybody. So we want to make sure that when you send it in, you are understanding that your communication will be a public record at some point and out there. So please send all of your questions to Mary Lou, who will forward them to Peter and the TAC, and we'll go from there.
I'll let Mary Lou know once what we think our timeline is, and then maybe that'll help you plan your next working group meeting.
Perfect. We currently have any other members of the working group have any comments before we ask any members of the public, of which there are 83 totals of us on this call. if anybody has any questions or comments, because we do provide for public comment at these meetings, what I'd ask you to do is, if you do, please raise your hand. But let's go through the members of the working group and see if there's any final comments. Commissioner Furr?
One thing I would say, we're asking for things to be directed in two places. If it's a legal question, it needs to go to the legal people. If it's a mechanics issue on having to do with recycling or solid waste, then it needs to go to the working group. So make those distinctions, that's all.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Tooley, anything else? Becky, you're on mute. Commissioner Glassman, you're on mute as well, Steve. Commissioner Good, anything else?
Mayor Sturmer, I just want to say a great job running the meeting again today, and glad to see you back in the saddle again, sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Mayor Ryan? Mike, go ahead. Mike?
Yeah, no questions.
Okay. Vice Mayor Mayerson?
No questions.
Vice Mayor Javelana? Thank you. Do any members of the public have any questions or comments with regard to today's meeting? Please raise your hand.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's my thought. I'm not sure whether it's
No, that'll work.
Seeing none, Mary Lou or Sally, can you help us understand two things, please? One, have we posted a link on the league website to today's PowerPoint presentation?
I just lost it.
Mary Lou or Sally?
I am now.
Historically, we've posted everything from the solid waste meetings on our website directly following the meeting.
Okay, so after this meeting, the PowerPoint presentation that was utilized will be available on the Broward League of Cities website under the solid waste under the solid waste tab. And Mary Lou or Sally, how do we then make the recording of today's meeting likewise available on our website?
We will, the PowerPoint is out. It was in the link for this meeting, so it's already public, but we will add it to the website. And once we figure out the technical on the recording, we will add that to the website too.
Thank you.
And it will all be under the same tab that it currently is.
And let me personally thank Mary Lou and Sally for arranging this along with county staff. We truly appreciate everything everybody did to make this happen. We know we're all getting used to these public video meetings, and we're perfecting the art, and have had 95, I think, people on this one. Was pretty good today.
Mayor, we have one question from Marty Sherwood. So, Sally, if you could unmute him.
He's unmuted.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Marty.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. Excellent job. The work, fantastic. I know it's months of preparation. Big concern we need to look at is credit ratings. And I emphasize in the chat, Commissioner Furr, you are right on target with the differentiation, the independent-dependent. But with the comparison, due to our size and the amount of dollars and long-term implication ramifications, credit ratings are our top priority. And my concern would be the millage cap and participation would definitely impact credit ratings. So if we could also maybe get some historical perspective on the different alternatives as to impact on credit ratings and the ratings obtained or issues. That's my only question, Mayor.
Thank you, Marty. We will get that answered for the next one. Sally, can you unmute, please, Mr. Gorin?
I sure can. I'm not finding him.
I have him near the top.
Where are you, Sam?
He's right below you.
Still here.
Okay, there you go.
Good morning,
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, everybody. Just one quick final comment, Mr. Mayor. To the extent that anyone from the public may have emailed the League of Cities either before the meeting or during this meeting or somewhere in between, would you just acknowledge for the record that there are no emails in connection with anything that's been presented this morning or with regard to the PowerPoints that were otherwise posted, just to make sure the record reflects that, Mayor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We... 1 second.
To Mary Lou or Sally, or at you, Mayor.
I'm sorry, what was that, Sam?
No, we have had one letter sent and I forwarded that to Mayor Sturmer.
Yes, I'm trying to find it.
Thank you. Just want to make sure that the full panoply of public access is understood and embraced here.
Mary Lou, I can't find it. I got it here somewhere, I just can't find it.
It was from the... a private group of waste haulers represented by Luciano Islas, I believe is how you Thank pronounce you. His last name. We do have it for the record. I don't know, Sam, do you think it, does it have to be read in the record?
Not necessarily unless the requester asked for it, but to the extent that there is such a letter, it's publicly available. It was made available and will be made part of this record once this meeting concludes and is adjourned.
I will post that on the league website along with the other, with the PowerPoint and the agenda.
Thank you very much. And the recording. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody have anything else? I don't see any other hands raised. We'd like to thank everyone for participating today. Thank you to all the working group members, Peter and every member of the TAC. Thank you for a wonderful job in getting us to today. And we will send out a meeting notification once we get all the questions in. What I'd ask the working group members, if you can, to please submit your questions to Mary Lou by the end of this week. You know, you may want to have time to talk about it with some of your folks internally and get some, you know, clarifications on some things. But if we can get questions in from the working group members to Mary Lou by the end of the week, she can then at least get them off to the TAC. And then we can start to figure out from there next timelines. With that, I want to thank everyone for participating today. Have a great Monday, and please be safe, be healthy, and be smart.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Good job.